Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Anyone following the show knows my take is the war is over. Bakhmut was a turning point, that the Russians have won the war. It's all over, but for the shouting. It turns out Ukraine was so desperate it was putting elderly and kids on the front line, where their lifespan was approximately 4 hours. So the question becomes, what the hell has gone on here? How have we been played? And here I find a piece by Ron Unz on Unz.com, UNZ.com, on war and propaganda in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Pretty damn interesting, so I want to share that with you and comment about it and talk about what's been going on here, because the world, but especially the United States, have been so massively played by propaganda. Remember, Vladimir Putin made it very, very clear already on the 24th of February, 2022, last year, the day of the invasion, to which he referred as a special military operation, why Russia was compelled to enter Ukraine. And it had to do, of course, with the massive bombardment of Donetsk. It had been taking place since 2014, killing thousands of ethnic Russians residing in that area, where the Donetsk and Luhansk oblasts had already voted to become a part of Russia, where Kiev was playing a massive assault on the Donbass, and they would have taken no prisoners. It would have been a slaughter of unprecedented proportions in Ukraine. Russian intelligence knew it was taking place and launched a preemptive strike. The 40 or more biolabs, many of which run by the U.S. government, some of which were focusing specifically on genetically Russian population for decimation biologically, where the West had betrayed Russia by seemingly agreeing to the Minsk Accord that would have brought a form of resolution without military engagement, but where even Angela Merkel would admit subsequently that it was all for a show and an opportunity to arm Ukraine to the teeth for the anticipated Russian intervention. Now, given that Ukraine had been firing more munitions than NATO can produce, given the debacle, where Zelensky would never surrender Bakhmut, which turns out to be the pivotal battle of the war, Russia has prevailed. They surrounded the city. They left a corridor for Ukrainians to escape. NATO's tattered and torn. So what we have here from Ron Hoods looks to me like a very nice reflective piece. I want to share it with you and talk about it. War and propaganda in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Ron Hoods. We recently passed the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine war, and the Wall Street Journal published a lengthy review of the 12 months of the conflict, summarizing what had happened and describing future prospects, an article that attracted more than 2,500 comments. Ukraine is the West's war now. The initial reluctance of the U.S. and its allies to help Kiev fight Russia has turned into a massive program of military assistance, which carries risk of its own. By Yaroslav Trofimov, Wall Street Journal, February 25th, 2023. Although hardly critical of our involvement, the writer noted that America and its allies had already provided Ukraine with an astonishing $120 billion in military equipment and money, a figure far larger than Russia's entire defense budget, with further massive outlays still to come. As the title of the piece indicated, the West had effectively now taken over control of the war, and if the effort to defeat Russian President Vladimir Putin failed, American global influence might be undermined and the future of the NATO alliance called into question. Indeed, such notable foreign policy luminaries as John Mearsheimer, Jeffrey Sachs, Douglas McGregor, and Loris Wilkinson have all recently raised the possibility that NATO risks disintegration, especially in the wake of Seymour Hersh bombshell disclosure that President Biden had illegally destroyed the Nord Stream pipelines, some of Europe's most important civilian energy infrastructure. So in effect, America is at war with Russia on Russia's own border. And if we lose that war, the era of our global dominance that followed the 1991 collapse of the Soviet Union might come to an end. Since the earliest days of the fighting, our electronic and social media have functioned as unrestrained cheerleaders, hailing Ukrainian victories and Russian defeats. But this Wall Street Journal article could not avoid providing a much more sobering perspective. Although this war has been of enormous world importance, I've actually written very little about the details of the conflict. I lack any military expertise, Ron Hoons writes, and doubted that I could contribute anything useful about the fighting, which was anyway obscured by the fog of war. America is reigning neocon establishment, totally controls the Western mainstream media. And over the last few decades, they have made propaganda, dishonest or otherwise, one of their most frequently deployed political weapons. Indeed. No sooner had the war broken out than social media was awash with the heroic exploits of the Ghost of Kiev and the Martyrs of Snake Island, outright hoaxes that were widely disseminated and believed at the time. We live in the era of smartphones, so video clips showing Russian tanks destroyed, Russian troops defeated or retreating were widely promoted by partisans of the Ukrainian side. But such anecdotal evidence seemed totally meaningless to me. In 1940, the French army suffered one of history's most lopsided defeats at the hands of the Germans. Yet, if smartphones had been around at the time, it would have been easy for pro-French activists to provide hundreds of clips showing destroyed German panzers or small German units suffering defeat. Such war porn seemed more like entertainment for political partisans than anything having serious value. This obvious problem soon led some observers to search out a means for more objectively determining combat losses. Many of them began relying on the ORYX website, O-R-Y-X website, run by a purportedly independent open source organization that organized and displayed images of destroyed tanks and other military vehicles, thereby allowing analysts to total up the losses suffered by each side in the conflict. Journalists and others soon used this photographic evidence to conclude that the Russians had suffered enormous, almost catastrophic losses, with the undergunned but highly motivated Ukrainian defenders destroying huge numbers of Russian tanks and other military vehicles, a result that suggested very high Russian casualties. The alleged loss of Russian hardware, documented by ORYX, seemed absolutely staggering. One of the main website pages itemizes nearly 9,500 Russian armored vehicles lost, of which 6,000 were destroyed and nearly 2,800 captured. These losses included nearly 1,800 tanks, with well over 500 of these captured by the plucky Ukrainians. Each of these listed items is linked to a photograph, most of them either being uploaded separately or contained within a tweet. For example, 244 destroyed or captured Ts, 72 B tanks are listed, all individually numbered and linked to the photographic evidence. Obviously, not all destroyed Russian vehicles would have been swept up, so the true scale of Russia's apparent losses must surely have been considerably greater. Ukraine's hardware losses were also cataloged, but they only totaled about 3,000 armored vehicles. Links to the report. ORYX. Russian military equipment losses. ORYX. Ukrainian military equipment losses. Throughout most of the last year, our mainstream media outlets have been filled with stories of Ukrainian victories and Russian defeats. And surely, the large compendium of factual material provided by the ORYX website has been an important reason for this. The ORYX Wikipedia entry runs only three short paragraphs, but explains that the website has been regularly cited by Reuters, the BBC, The Guardian, The Economist, Newsweek, CNN, and CBS. with Forbes hailing Oryx as outstanding and the most reliable source in the conflict so far. My impression is that many writers on military affairs are enthralled by such photos of heavy equipment, whether intact or destroyed. And Oryx provides many thousands of such striking images, thus capturing their rapt attention. If the Russians had indeed suffered more than three times the Ukrainian losses in armored vehicles, with well over 500 of their tanks captured by the latter, a Ukrainian military triumph might have seemed very likely. So the Americans and their allies naturally rewarded their victorious protégés with a tidal wave of financial and military support that easily topped $100 billion. The supposed Ukrainian achievement was certainly a remarkable one. According to Wikipedia, the largest land offensive in German history was Germany's 1941 Operation Barbarossa, which involved fewer than 7,000 armored vehicles. But if we credit Oryx, over the last 12 months, Ukraine's doughty patriots have totally annihilated a far greater Russian mechanized force, while their own losses have been just a fraction of that. Individuals should decide for themselves how plausible such total numbers sound. I only very recently looked at the Oryx website, and the first issue that came to mind was how anyone could possibly determine whether the images were real, faked, or duplicated. According to Wikipedia, the Ukrainian military possessed thousands of tanks, many of them being the same models used by the invading Russians. So if the Ukrainian activists uploaded a photo of a destroyed T-72B to Oryx, how can we really be sure it was a Russian tank rather than one of their own? What if several different photos of the same wrecked vehicle were taken from different angles and separately uploaded? The fighting in the Donbass began in 2014, and we can be sure that the photograph provided, and can we be sure that the photograph provided are from the current fighting rather than from battles fought years ago? None of the military enthusiasts whom I asked had any ready answers to those questions, perhaps because they had never even previously considered such troubling possibilities. During the recent decades, Hollywood special effect wizards have displayed great technical skill in showing Spider-Man swinging between skyscrapers and the Incredible Hulk undergoing a transformation, surely producing simple photographs of destroyed military equipment would be a triviality, with the costs almost invisibly small compared to a movie budget. But consider that those simple photographs uploaded to a Dutch website have been a crucial factor in attracting many tens of billions of dollars of financial support from American and allied governments, giving each single image on the Oryx website a potential value of $10 million or more. Producing fake photographs is certainly much safer and easier than destroying Russian tanks in real life, and doing so on an industrial scale would seem a very cost-effective propaganda strategy. So it's difficult to believe that neither the Ukrainians nor their neocon CIA MI6 mentors ever decided to employ such methods. Putting the issue in very crude terms, I doubt whether Russian losses may be accurately estimated by aggregating and analyzing what amounted to Ukrainian propaganda tweets. Furthermore, an examination of Oryx origins raised other troubling issues. From the Iraq War onward, the credibility of the American government has steadily deteriorated, considerably weakening the effectiveness of its international propaganda campaigns, a central pillar of its international influence. Then in 2014, a British blogger named Elliot Higgins established Bellingcat, supposedly an independent research organization that relied upon the objective analysis of open source material. However, in practice, his efforts seem to almost invariably produce conclusions closely allied with American foreign policy interests in Syria, Ukraine, and other international flashpoints. This, notably including the shootdown of Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 and the alleged gas attack in Syria that Higgins himself had covered the previous year, always pinning the blame upon governments that were the targets of American hostility. Numerous distinguished international journalists and other experts, notably including Seymour Hersh, Theodore Postol, and Carol von Wolferen, often came to totally different conclusions, but their views were usually ignored by the media. While Bellingcat was heavily quoted in Western outlets as fully confirming the accusations of the American government. As a consequence, there have been widespread suspicions that Bellingcat merely operated as a tool of Western intelligence services, very similar to how the CIA had established other such front organizations for propaganda purposes during the original Cold War. According to the Wikipedia page on Oryx, both its founders were Bellingcat alumni, raising serious questions about whether they are really as independent-minded as they claim to be. Meanwhile, other American military experts have provided very different assessments of the course of the war. For decades, Colonel Douglas MacGregor has been regarded as a leading conservative military strategist, authoring several well-regarded books, having many dozens of guest appearances on Fox News. After having a long career in NATO, he had been a finalist for the position of National Security Advisor, serves as a senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense, and was nominated as U.S. Ambassador to Germany. He is obviously very well connected in such establishment military circles, and based upon his Pentagon contacts, he has repeatedly stated that it is actually the Ukrainian forces who have suffered horrendous casualties, including as many as 160,000 combat deaths, compared to far lower Russian losses of perhaps 20,000 or so. Other military experts, such as Scott Ritter and Larry Johnson, have expressed very similar views. Across all of his numerous interviews, MacGregor comes across as quite persuasive and confident in his assessments of a military situation. Given the enthusiastic, almost uniform support of powerful Western political, financial, and media interests in the Ukrainian side, I find it difficult to understand why MacGregor, Ritter, Johnson, and others would be taking such contrary positions unless they sincerely believe they were correct. Indeed, a BBC research effort recently used social media and open sources to identify 14,709 individual Russian service members killed in the war, a figure that seems quite consistent with McGregor's total estimate of 20,000. So we have diametrically conflicting positions, with Ukrainian officials and the Yorex website claiming Russian losses have been several times greater than Ukrainian, while McGregor and his ally put the ratio at perhaps 8-1 in the opposite direction. I personally lean much more toward McGregor's perspective, but I actually doubt that the issue matters much in strategic terms. From the beginning, I never regarded the operational level details of the fighting in Ukraine as very interesting or important, and haven't paid much attention to it. This explains why I had never looked at the Oryx website until just a few days ago. If the Russian army were completely defeated by the Ukrainians and lost control of Crimea, then Donbass, that sort of military disaster for Russia, would have major global consequences. But I consider that possibility exceptionally unlikely and doubt that anyone sensible thinks otherwise. I'll be right back.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
To pick up where I left off with Ron Huens and his brilliant piece on propaganda and disinformation in relation to the Russia-Ukraine war, if the Russian army were completely defeated by the Ukrainians and lost control of Crimea and the Donbass, that sort of military disaster for Russia would have major global consequences. But I consider that possibility exceptionally unlikely and doubt that anyone sensible thinks otherwise. Instead, and here I diverge from Owen's take, it seems almost certain that the war will either become roughly stalemated, as many Western analysts seem to believe, or that the Russians will eventually crush Ukrainians, as predicted by McGregor and some other Western experts, which I take to be the case. But unless the latter result draws in NATO forces and leads to a wider war, with possible risk of a nuclear confrontation, I don't think the strategic consequences are much different in those two contrasting scenarios. Before the war began, the Russians were widely expected to overwhelm Ukrainian resistance in a matter of weeks. And compared to those early expectations, the war has already been stalemated for a full year. In hindsight, Russia's failure to win a quick, decisive victory should not have been too surprising. For example, I'd been entirely unaware that Ukraine actually had an enormous regular army, more than three times the size of Germany's, and far larger than that of any European NATO country. Much of Ukraine's military was fully trained to NATO standards, including reserves and the National Guard. Ukraine deployed more than 500,000 ground troops, outnumbering the attacking Russian forces by around 3-1, with many of its best units heavily entrenched in strong defensive positions. Under such challenging circumstances, it's quite understandable that the Russians have required a year of heavy fighting to gain ground against the stubborn Ukrainian defenders, with the latter heavily backed by supplies and assistance from America and the rest of NATO. But although Russia's operational progress on the battlefield has been slow and mixed, on the geostrategic level, the Russians have already won a series of major victories. China, Iran, India, Saudi Arabia, and most of the other non-Western countries have clearly moved toward Russia, which also easily surmounted the unprecedented sanctions that most had expected would cripple her economy. The reckless American destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline and the European energy crisis may eventually cause the collapse of NATO. Putin's domestic approval rating is in the 80s, probably as high as it has ever been. And I don't see any of these results changing if the military stalemate continues. 1 year ago, just after the war broke out, I outlined my broader perspective in a long article. For more than 100 years, all of America's many wars have been fought against totally outmatched adversaries, opponents that possess merely a fraction of the human, industrial, and natural resources that we and our allies controlled. This massive advantage regularly compensated for many of our serious early mistakes in those conflicts. So the main difficulty our elected leaders faced was merely persuading the often very reluctant American citizenry to support a war, which is why many historians have alleged that such incidents as the sinking of the Maine and of the Lusitania and the attacks on Pearl Harbor and Tonkin Bay were orchestrated or manipulated for exactly that purpose. This huge advantage in potential power is certainly the case when World War II broke out in Europe. And Charles Voronoff and others have emphasized that the British and French empires, backed by America, commanded potential military resources vastly superior to those of Germany, a mid-sized country smaller than Texas. The surprise was a depth and was that despite such overwhelming odds, Germany proved highly successful for several years before finally going down to defeat. Consider the attitude taken during the current conflict with Russia, a severe Cold War confrontation that might conceivably turn hot. Remember now, this is before the war broke out. Despite its great military strength and enormous nuclear arsenal, Russia seemed just as outmatched as any past American foe, including the NATO countries and Japan. The American alliance commands a 6-1 advantage in population, 12-1 superiority in economic production, the key sinews of international power. Such an enormous disparity is implicit in the attitudes of our strategic planners and their media mouthpieces. But this is a very unrealistic view of the true correlation of forces. Just 2 weeks before the Russian attack on Ukraine, Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping held the 39th personal meeting in Jinping and declared their partnership had no limits. China will certainly support Russia in any global conflict. Meanwhile, America's endless attacks and vilification of Iran have gone on for decades, culminating in our assassination 2 years ago of the country's top military commander, Qasem Soleimani, who had been mentioned as a leading candidate in Iran's 2021 presidential elections, together with our Israeli allies. We have also assassinated many of Iran's top scientists over the past decade. And in 2020, Iran publicly accused America of having unleashed the COVID biowarfare weapon against their country, which infected much of their parliament and killed many members of their political elite. Iran would certainly side with Russia as well. America, together with its NATO allies and Japan, does possess huge superiority in any test of global power against Russia alone. However, that would not be the case against a coalition consisting of Russia, China, and Iran. And indeed, I think the latter group might actually have the upper hand, given its enormous weight of population, natural resources, and industrial strength. Since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, America has enjoyed a unipolar moment, reigning as the world's sole hyperpower. But this status has fostered our overweening arrogance and international aggression against far weaker targets, finally leading to the creation of a powerful bloc of states willing to stand up against us. He continues, "Then last October, I updated my analysis and think that subsequent developments have generally confirmed my appraisal." He continues, "I wrote those words just weeks after the war began, and, as is inevitable in any conflict, various matters have gone differently than anyone originally predicted. The Russians have been widely expected to sweep the Ukrainians before them, but instead, they have encountered very determined resistance, suffered heavy casualties as they made slow progress. Generously resupplied with advanced weapons from NATO stockpiles, the Ukrainians recently launched successful counterattacks, forcing Russian President Vladimir Putin to call up 300,000 reserves. But although Russia's military efforts have only been partially successful on all other fronts, America and its allies have suffered a series of strategic geopolitical defeats. At the start of the war, most observers believe that the unprecedented sanctions imposed by America and its NATO allies would deal a crippling blow to the Russian economy. Instead, Russia has escaped any serious damage, while the loss of cheap Russian energy has devastated the European economies and severely hurt our own, resulting in the highest inflation rates in 40 years. The Russian ruble was expected to collapse, but is now stronger than it was before. Germany is the industrial engine of Europe, and the sanctions imposed on Russia were so self-destructive that popular protests began demanding that they be lifted and the Nord Stream energy pipelines reopened to forestall any such potential defection. Those Russian-German pipelines were suddenly attacked and destroyed, almost certainly with the approval and involvement of the U.S. government. America is not legally at war with Russia, let alone Germany. So this probably represents the greatest peacetime destruction of civilian infrastructure in the history of the world, inflicting enormous lasting damage upon our European allies. Our total dominance over the global media has so far prevented most ordinary Europeans or Americans from recognizing what transpired. But as the energy crisis worsens and the truth gradually begins to emerge, NATO might have a hard time surviving. As I discussed recently, America may have squandered three generations of European friendship by destroying those vital pipelines. Meanwhile, many years of arrogant and oppressive American behavior towards so many other major countries has produced a powerful backlash of support for Russia. According to news reports, the Iranians have provided the Russians with large numbers of their advanced drones, which have been effectively deployed against the Ukrainians. Since World War II, our alliance with Saudi Arabia has been a linchpin of our Middle Eastern policy. But the Saudis have now repeatedly sided with the Russians on oil production issues, completely ignoring America's demands, despite threats of retaliation from Congress. Turkey has NATO's largest military, but it is closely cooperating with Russia on natural gas shipments. India has also moved closer to Russia on crucial issues, ignoring the sanctions we have imposed on Russian oil, except for our political vassal states. Most major world powers seem to be lining up on Russia's side. Since World War II, one of the central powers of global American dominance has been the status of the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency and our associated control over the international banking system. Until recently, we always presented our role as neutral and administrative, but we have increasingly begun weaponizing that power, using our position to punish those states we dislike, and this is naturally forcing other countries to seek alternatives. Perhaps the world could tolerate our freezing the financial assets of relatively small countries such as Venezuela or Afghanistan. But our seizure of Russia's $300 billion in foreign reserves obviously tipped the balance. And major countries are increasingly seeking to shift their transactions away from the dollar and the banking network that we control. Although the economic decline of the EU caused a corresponding fall in the euro and drove up the dollar by default, the longer-term prospect for our continued currency hegemony hardly seems good. And given our horrendous budget and trade deficits, a flight from the dollar might easily collapse the U.S. economy. Soon after the outbreak of the Ukrainian war, the eminent historian Alfred McCoy argued, "We are witnessing the geopolitical birth of a new world order, one built upon a Russian-China alliance that could dominate the Euro-Asian landmass." His discussion with Amy Goodman have been viewed nearly 2 million times. And as many of you are aware, I agree with that analysis. What has happened is that the United States has squandered its credibility with Russia. There's no possible way that Russia could continue to have any faith or confidence in the West, including the United States, especially after the betrayal over the Minsk agreements, which were solemnly agreed to as a peace plan for Ukraine that would forestall any necessity for military intervention, but which was in fact used merely as camouflage for NATO to build up the Ukrainian military to an extent that it became the formidable force that Ron Unz has hereby described. As I've observed, the West has lost Ukraine has been defeated. Bakhmut was a pivotal battle in the entire war. All that's left is the shouting. NATO has admitted it cannot produce munitions at the rate Ukraine has been expending them. As a former Marine Corps artillery officer, most casualties in war are brought about not by the infantry, not by tanks, not by hand-to-hand fighting, but by artillery. When Ukraine runs out of artillery, the war is over, but the battle has already been lost. And the fact that they were having to conscript elderly men and children to fight at Bakhmut tells all we need to know. I received a phone call during the break from an expert on military affairs with whom I frequently consulted. And he said that Mark Milley, who is our chief of staff and a complete idiot, has assured Ukraine that the United States is going to assist Ukraine in a counterattack to retake the Donbass and no doubt Crimea as well. Let me state categorically, there is no prospect of that happening whatsoever. As I previously reported to, Mike Adams observed, and this was a month ago, that the United States could not engage in a conventional war with Russia and prevail because, as is the case with the Ukrainians consuming more artillery than NATO can produce, the United States does not have the munition production facilities to sustain a war. It would take 1 to 2 years to develop, and in 1 to 2 years, it's all over. It's all over. The whole idea of taking out the Nord Stream was a catastrophe. It has essentially killed the European economy. These are supposed to be our allies, our friends, nations that benefit from their relationship with the United States. But the consequence, the effect, has been precisely the opposite. Taking out Nord Stream was an act of war. Taking out Nord Stream was a war crime. Taking out Nord Stream affected the infrastructure. That makes a huge difference to civilian life. And it's an act for which the United States will be permanently stained. We have morons and incompetence running the American government. There's no way around it. If the Democrats had not been so insistent on remaining in control of the government, stealing the election one after another, state after state, with Dominion voting machine and draw boxes and inflated voter registration rolls, the pendulum would have swung in the direction of a course correction by returning Trump to office. He deserved the win in 2020. That he won, that the election was stolen, is not a big lie. It's a fact. Anyone who paid attention, as did I, to the polling in all the key groups, including Hispanics, including Catholics, including Blacks, saw they were gravitating toward Trump. No one had the least interest in Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. No one. I mean literally no one. They had a joint appearance in Phoenix shortly before the election of 2020. And the number who turned out was a reflection of the enthusiasm for the Biden-Harris ticket. Namely, nobody came. Zilch, zero, nada. and the American media would have us believe this is the guy who got the most votes of any candidate in American history? Give us a break. Don't let yourself be played. Don't be a sucker. Don't be a sap. The Democrats have turned into liars, cheaters, phonies, fakes, frauds. Now killers, war criminals. This Nord Stream thing is catastrophic in every possible way. The sanctions on Russia have backfired. BRICS is thriving. The Shanghai Cooperative, booming. The ruble at an all-time high. Russia, which wanted to have cordial commercial relations with the West, especially with Germany, was going to create an economic powerhouse in Europe, which would have left the United States on the outside looking in. We could not allow that to happen. We destroyed Nord Stream. And the consequence is, given the betrayals of the West, since our solemn agreement not to move one inch to the east, that Russia is turning to the east, and with China will create the new industrial superpower for the future.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, here's a pretty damn interesting piece I would just receive from Joaquin Agopian, which seemed to me to complement what I have been reporting here from Ron Oons, how we got to today's precipice. The Rothschild deep state cabal is imploding. God, I like that so much. He begins with a quote from Thomas Jefferson. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organize its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. The same momentous year that kicked off the American Revolution, 1776, was also the first year that ex-Jesuit Adam Westrup in Bavaria founded his Illuminati order, sponsored by Mayor Ishmael Rothschild as House of Rothschild Patriarch in nearby Frankfurt, Germany. And it was America's third U.S. resident, Thomas Jefferson, who refused renewal of the Rothschild-controlled First Bank of America's charter in 1811. The American Revolution may have been fought for independence from King George's British monarchy, but not independence from the Rothschild central banking cartel, who's controlling 70% foreign interest in First Bank of America, indebted America's earliest citizen. In the end of George Washington's 8 years as first president, in 1791, the Federalist Rothschild agent Alexander Hamilton installed for the Rothschilds their First Bank of America. Not renewing its charter, Jefferson kicked the Rothschild-owned bank out of the U.S., which became the basis for America's first war as a sovereign independent country, once again facing the same British enemy in the War of 1812. This war was fought over financial independence from Britain's city of London, only causing young America to drown further in war debt, as Nathan Rothschild, backing independence, backing both sides to every conflict he creates, was determined to bankrupt the U.S. to force it into recolonialization. Despite the hard-fought American military victory, by 1815, with the U.S. war debt nearly tripled at $119.2 million in the red, America, financially, was already a major debtor nation, owing the infamous bloodline banking dynasty. that same year, making a colossal fortune over the Battle of Waterloo outcome by pre-rigging his investment. The gloating crook, Nathan Rothschild, proclaimed, "I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the British money supply." Sadly, America's War of 1812, struggle for financial independence from the Rothschild controllers, was lost. A brief excerpt from my Pedophilia and Empire series, book 3, chapter 1, on the Rothschild family. In 1816, with yet a second Bank of the United States foisted on American citizens for the next 20 years, in effect, Rothschild was simply seizing his predatory ownership of the United States. And once again, private control over the U.S. money supply, tackling on parasitic interest, went into the coffers of as many as 1,000 foreign investors, with Nathan's younger brother, Baron James de Rothschild in Paris, holding the controlling shares. When the Second Bank of America's charter was up for renewal 20 years later, in 1836, that year Nathan Rothschild died. But Francis James de Rothschild assumed control over both the London and Paris banking branches, battled playing dirty as usual for charter renewal. He met his match as the resolute, feisty President Andrew Jackson was up to the challenge, declaring war on the House of Rothschild. "You are a den of vipers. I intend to rout you out, and by eternal God, I will rout you out." President Jackson's turn to oppose the centralized money changers ultimately proved successful, kicking the Rothschilds out of America yet again, and the second British dynasty U.S. takeover was again foiled, at least temporarily. However, the year prior, in 1835, amidst a battle over the U.S. private central bank, Jackson barely dodged a bullet to literally escape an assassination attempt attributed to Rothschild wrath. From 1836 to 1913, the U.S. was largely free of the treacherous Rothschild leeches from Europe, signifying America's longest period of foremost economic growth and prosperity in its entire history. Having acquired central bank control over Europe and through Nathan Rothschild's ownership of the Bank of England, by early 19th century, the British East India Company monopoly over international trade, including both the drug and slave trade, spanned the globe from Africa, the Indian and Pacific Oceans, to North America and Europe. A flourishing international banking cartel consolidated its growing global money lending power over every commercial trade on every continent. But one vast sprawling nation covering two continents over the centuries resisted and eluded the Rothschild clutches. As a result, Russia was repeatedly targeted as its ruling Momonov monarchy managed to successfully evade the Rothschild predatory conquest, but not without murderous retribution. From author Eustace Mullins' New World Order, quote, "After the fall of Napoleon, the Rothschilds turned all their hatred against the Romanovs. In 1825, they poisoned Alexander the First. In 1855, they poisoned Nicholas the First. Other assassinations followed, culminating on the night of November 6, 1971, when a dozen Red Guards drove a truck up to the new Imperial Bank building in Moscow. They loaded the Imperial Jewel Collection and $700 million in gold loot, totaling more than $1 billion. The new regime also confiscated the 150 million acres in Russia, personally owned by the Tsar. In addition to a century of assassinating Romanov czars by poison, when Tsar Alexander II came to the aid of Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, which by many accounts attribute Russian support to preserving the Union. The vindictive Rothschild cartel, its primary backer of the Confederacy, vowed eternal revenge against the Russians and its royal family. Rothschild et al.'s war at all costs against Russia today in Ukraine is merely the same long legacy's outcome. Just prior to the Rothschild planned First World War in 1914, a few months earlier in late 1913, they deceptively struck through Congress their Federal Reserve Act on December 23rd, after most members had already left on Christmas break. The Jekyll Island rendezvous of the Fed Reserve architects included Paul Warburg, the German-born chief central banking Rothschild agent, moved to the U.S., ending up the second vice Fed chairman. Continuity of one thought mind pervaded the Warburg clan as Paul's son, James Paul Warburg, before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 1950, emphatically declared, "We shall have world government, whether we like it or not. The question is only whether world government will be achieved by consent or by conquest." Thus, the third Rothschild central private bank in America was established to take permanent full usury debtor system control over the U.S. money supply through bribery of Washington political puppet class and the American people through their engineered debtor system. 1913 also saw the passage of the Federal Income Tax Act, illegally squeezing tax dollars to rip off hardworking U.S. citizens just to pay off debt interest from all the bankers' war loans. This vicious control cycle is how Khazarian mafia swindlers have cunningly operated since their identity-snatching days of their ancient Khazar kingdom over a millennium ago. The Rothschild central banking controllers hired one of their own, distant cousin Karl Marx, to write his Marxist-Communist Manifesto in 1848. And it was the Rothschild cartel money, along with Rothschild agent Jacob Schiff in America, who financed his fellow Jews' Bolshevik revolution and their plotted murder and theft of Russian Tsar Nicholas II's family in 1917. And that $1 billion-plus of stolen Russian gold is said to have wound up stored in Rothschild's underground chamber at City of London's Bank of England. A centuries-long pattern of covert deception, murder, war, corruption, an insatiable appetite for greed and increased power characterizes all that is behind today's still operating Khazarian mafia bankster dynasty rooted in ancient Khazar more than a millennium ago. Closer to this century historically, one world government tyranny and depopulation eugenics have both reflected the elite's obsession. Rothschild crimes funded all three of the most bloodthirsty dictators in all of human history. the 1917 Russian Revolution spawned the rise of the Lenin-Stalin Communist Soviet Union democide, killing 66 million, mostly Christian Russians. Then, since the early 1930s, in addition to Bush, Rothschild and Blood-Feller bloodlines also funded the rise of Adolf Hitler, his alleged sacrifice of 6 million Jews in World War II was used cold-heartedly as Zionist bargaining chips for the non-Hebrew Ashkenazim false claim of Israelite birthright to a homeland in Palestine, promised to Lord Lionel Rothschild in the 1917 Balfour Declaration. 3 decades later, the pledge was fulfilled with the establishment of the Jewish state. Despite a non-Hebrew heritage, Ashkenazi non-Jews, who traced back originally to the Balfour, to the nomadic Turkish tribes, comprised 90% of today's Israeli population. The Balfour Declaration also made another pledge. Nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. The Jewish state, since its 1948 inception, that's 3/4 of a century now, has brutally pushed out the true Semite Arabs living in Palestine, their rightful ancient homeland. Yet they've been systematically destroyed by Israel's official genocidal apartheid policy. This fact is neither anti-Semitic nor what should be allowed or tolerated by the rest of the world. Yet with impunity, it has for far too long. This shameful reality is largely due to the Zionist House of Rothschild's influence and control over Israel. Also in the 1930s, the Rothschild groomed and backed yet another notorious Yale-educated dictator, Mao Zedong, also covertly supporting his democide against 65 million of his own sacrificed fellow Chinese. Over the centuries, you can recognize a pattern that these Luciferian bloodline controllers, led by the likes of the Rothschild and Rockefeller dynasties, have had ample practice committing genocides, financing the rise to power of all three dictators responsible for the deadliest genocides in all of history on this planet. That is, until the current unprecedented genocide against today's human race. In 1933, the globalists of the day attempted the first major coup against the United States government in a failed attempt to overthrow the Frank Delano Roosevelt single-handedly, prevented by Medal of Honor most decorated war hero, U.S. Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler. His intervention stopped the plotted criminal takeover, exposing it publicly in the press in 1934, as well as in his book. And though his courageous action successfully averted the treasonous subversion committed by some of America's wealthiest, most powerful conspiratorial traitors as captains of industry, bankers, and politicians, among them heir to the Singer's sewing fortune, Robert Sterling Clark, and George H.W. Bush's father, Prescott Bush, during World War II, as a Union Banking Corporation director, Bush's company was linked to financing, aiding, and abetting the U.S. Nazi enemy, Adolf Hitler. Yet his shockingly treasonous past was covered up, and he was sent to the U.S. Senate from Connecticut. Of course, the Bush-Clinton crime families are notorious for getting away with multiple felonies of high treason. Pedophile George Wuss Sr. was implicated in America's largest publicly exposed child sex trafficking network, tagged the Franklin scandal involving Nebraska children, some from Catholic Boys Town, directly trafficked to the White House during the Reagan-Bush administrations. While the Bush crime family are Satanists, or fellow Satanists arrested in this scandal cover-up was the fall guy, Lawrence E. King, though the entire operation was quickly swept under the carpet as ringleader King, aided by the likes of Satanist Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, hotel drop-off of a cash-filled suitcase to King. Like Epstein, Lawrence King was also handed a sweetheart deal with next to no jail time, considering his ungodly crimes. Of course, Aquino always walked free, despite being linked to multiple pedo scandals, protected by his military status high up in America's MK mind-controlled operation, identified by a number of child victims at the Presidio daycare scandal, as well as implicated by Kathy O'Brien as an MK Ultra top programmer. America's highest profile pedophile child sex trafficker is supposedly deceased Jeffrey Epstein, while his gal pal partner in crime Ghislaine Maxwell serves a 20-year sentence in a Florida federal penitentiary. Whereas the Franklin scandal incriminates the Bush crime family, both the Epstein-Maxwell operation and Pizzagate scandal exposed the Rothschild, Clinton, Podesta, Obama, Biden crime families, including Donald Trump touting what a terrific guy Epstein was to 2004 New York Magazine, adding how he loves the young ones, wink, wink. The fact is, America's uniparty is infested with hundreds of compromised famous pedophiles and gatekeeping enablers still walking free, despite the tons of cameras capturing their crimes as evidence. Outside of King, Epstein, and Maxwell, zero arrests and prosecutions of any prominent guilty pedo criminals, including British, Belgian, and Dutch royalty, prime ministers and presidents, as well as billionaire criminals like Bill Gates, hundreds, perhaps thousands of these blackmailed VIP politicians, judges, police chiefs, generals, CEOs, bankers, and entertainers, all guilty of horrific child sex abuse crimes, have yet to face their unholiest of holy karma. Unholy karma. Multiple characters in Pedophilia Empire Book 4 unravel the U.S. pedo scourge and other scandals throughout the world in the other books. The New World Order secret societies and the global pedophile network generating enormous black ops revenue involving colossal amounts of money laundered by all Rothschild private central banks are explicitly intertwined and fully documented in the 5-volume series with access to all 50-plus chapters here. Because so much accelerated shocking truth is coming out weekly, with a 1 in 6 billion chance of so many disastrous chemical spill derailments all at once, man-made earthquakes, punishing nations aligned with Russia, all are only further incriminating the bloodline controllers and their puppet minions at the highest echelons of Western power. The reason why the Ukraine war is so huge right now, carrying so much at stake, is because the entire New World Order's one world government scheme is riding on the bloodline controllers' defeat by Russia and Ukraine as their longtime devil's playground hub gets further exposed in the global public. With all these bloodline criminals vis-a-vis the Rothschild dynasty atop this predatory food chain, busily bribing, blackmailing, and silencing facts and truth tellers through any and all means necessary, It's to ensure that their psychopathic club of elites remains unreachable and immune from all prosecution and long overdue justice. They know more than enough criminal evidence is out there in the public domain to convict these genocidal killers for their unending crimes, and they know that we, the people, are closing in on them. And because of this, the monstrous bees are willing to unleash nuclear Armageddon. We are living through epic times, and though millions have already perished, and perhaps billions more will follow in this war between good and evil, we have them on the run, rushing like cockroaches for the cover of darkness, but armed and united by the truth, justice will be done. As a consequence of the covert subversive overthrow of the United States government taking place in recent years, both the complete absence of the rule of law and rampant treasonous failure to uphold the current U.S. Constitution currently has Americans and people around the world waking up in righteous anger by the thousands every single day.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I'm completing Joaquin Egovian's How We Got to Today's Precipice, the Rothschild Deep State Cabal is imploding, devoutly to be wished. Bear in mind, he's the author of the 5 volumes, Pedophilia and Empire, to which he's making a number of allusions here. Available on Amazon.com. As a consequence of the covert subversive overthrow of the United States government taking place in recent years, both a complete absence of the rule of law and rampant treasonous failure to uphold the U.S. Constitution, currently has Americans and people around the world waking up in righteous anger by the thousands every single day. Our founding fathers, like Thomas Jefferson, bestowed fundamental rights of liberty and freedom to every citizen, granting us clear-cut legal justification and guidance to, in his words, abolish the illegitimate treasonous regime occupying Washington today. Taking into account the U.S. government's repeated terrorist acts constituting democide against its own American citizenry, as well as having committed acts of war against U.S. closest allies like Germany via the Nord Stream sabotage, the Biden regime's intent to destroy both America and the West must be opposed immediately. A growing majority of Americans disapprove of Biden's job performance as imposter president, more so than any previous president in U.S. modern history during the entire 78 years of presidential poll ratings. After the U.S. Supreme Court declined the Brunson case out of Utah last month for a second time this year, the long-shot effort to hold the vast majority of Congress accountable for illegally ratifying a fraudulent, rigged 2020 election has been thwarted. All three branches of government, the executive, legislative, and judiciary, have systematically failed Americans by repeatedly violating the Constitution in clear breach of their sworn oath to uphold and defend. All three branches have committed treason for destroying our nation through reckless, willful crimes, endangering both the American as well as global population targeted or extermination by the elites. Nuremberg 2.0 needs to immediately be invoked for mass tribunal trials of multitudes of genocidal traitors determined to impose a diabolical exposed depopulation agenda on humanity. The assassination of John F. Kennedy, the president who vowed to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, reduce the power of the Federal Reserve, and avert a decade-long costly war in Vietnam, set the stage for the deep state to fester and thrive ever since. 22 November 1963. Every U.S. president ever since has been a mere puppet for bloodline controllers to rape the earth and humanity in the name of the military, industrial, security, big pharma complex. In this century, the Khazarian mafia invested and controlled international criminal cabal, manufactured their new Pearl Harbor 9/11. An Israeli neocon, grand satanic blood sacrifice, after the pre-written Patriot Act, straight out of the dialectical problem-reaction-solution con game playbook, intended to strip away all American constitutional rights. A lose-lose are less freedom for less security, and win-win for Satanism, thinly disguised as collateral damage behind their fabricated war on terror against Muslim terrorists they create, train, and finance as fake proxy war U.S. enemies, supplemented their ongoing war on drugs to destroy African-American families for the prison security complex. Then, when convenient again, switch the revolting enemy back to the Russians and Chinese in Cold War II to drive humanity off the Armageddon cliff with today's nuclear World War III countdown. And now, along with the threat of a mushroom cloud, their enemy target today expands to a genocidal war against the entire human species, with their fake pandemic killer jabs, malevolent agenda to destroy national sovereignty via the United Nations World Health Organization, subversively imposing more fake or deadly health emergencies, possessing an unlimited bioweapon arsenal, bringing more draconian lockdowns, more killer mandates, along with their 15-minute smart cities, control grid, prison enslavement, planet-wide mass surveillance, Chinese model social credit scores, freezing dissidents' bank accounts, requiring digital ID approval, and cashless World Bank digital currency, all part of their Great Reset. The globalist wet dream is our never-ending nightmare of absolute myopic control over the culled down, beaten down, traumatized, lobotomized population of jab DNA altered, group hived, AI mind control, cyborg survivors. This is our bleak, Lucifer controlled future if we remain weak, passive, defeated, and ignorant. Activism is growing in a planet-wide movement, protesting against the Ukraine debacle, along with the price inflation, smart cities and World Economic Forum's enslavement, legal challenges against the technocratic tyranny, the genocide, the wokest insanity. Our enemy is on notice, and no doubt will be unleashing more false flags and weapons of mass destruction at us. But the momentum of growing resistance and opposition is mobilizing for the long war. I am a huge fan of Joaquin Hagopian. The catch, as I see it, is that as long as our ability to alter the course of our government is controlled by electronic voting machines, as long as the ability to steal one election after another remains in place, Americans are all but helpless to improve our situation. Absent taking up arms to oppose them. But the fact is, most Americans are so passive recipients of information being provided by the mainstream media, which is controlled by the Rothschilds. How many times have I emphasized I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. And I have a panel of another 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Then I have another panel of 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. At both the Associated Press and Roth and Reuters are owned by the Rothschilds. In other words, they manage, they control all the media. 95% comes from the AP and Rothschild. Virtually all news that isn't about local events comes from sources that are controlled by our enemy. And since the Democrats have sold out, have gone all in on the theft of elections, that they attack anyone who speaks out about it as though they were telling the big lie, which is a big lie that anyone had the least interest in Joe Biden or Kamala Harris becoming president and vice president of the United States. The public found them repulsive. And it continues to this day. So Joaquin is, of course, absolutely right. If you look at polls that bear any approximation, and mind you, they also attempt to influence and manage the polls, no one gives a damn about Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. The problem is, as long as changes in government are controlled by the use of electronic voting machines, where the motto of Dominion is, changing the way you vote, as in from Republican to Democrat, we're up a creek without a paddle. We must get rid of electronic voting machines. They must be illegal. We must return to hand counts and paper ballots. Otherwise, our resources are restricted to taking up arms against a tyrannical government. And while I could not agree more that that's exactly what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they adopted the Second Amendment, Americans are intimidated by the very prospect. I must say, of all the dumbing down, of all the fluoride in the water, where fluoride turns out to be a neurotoxin, kills brain cells, I'm convinced they're putting estrogen in the water. They don't want to allow or promote male aggression. They don't want alpha males to be leading opposition to a treasonous Democrat government. What could be more blatant and obvious than opening the border to millions of illegals entering the country? And not a damn thing is being done about it. Not a damn thing is being done about it. It's an invasion. This is an invasion. Have no doubt about it. There's nothing good. There's nothing beneficial. There's nothing remotely helpful to America by allowing an endless flood of illegals into the United States, where the Biden admin had not only rolled out the red carpet, giving them all kinds of benefits at taxpayer expense, or even putting them up in five-star hotels. The situation is beyond absurd. And the lack of response by Congress has to be viewed as an indication of how many members of Congress actually give a shit about the United States. How many actually give a shit? Every damn member of Congress ought to be protesting this endless flood across the border. For all his flaws, Donald Trump was sealing the border to a trickle. For all his flaws, Donald Trump was giving us a robust economy. For all his flaws, the lowest earning wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the highest rate. For all his flaws, Donald Trump made us energy independent. For all his flaws, Donald Trump has figured out how to gut the deep state. It's called Schedule F. For all his flaws, if we could get this man back into office, there'd be a dramatic change in the outcome. But everyone wanted Donald Trump back in office in 2020. Nobody wanted Biden and Harris. Believe me, I followed the polls before and after. The sentiment for reelecting Trump was overwhelming. The idea that the theft of the election or assertions that the election was stolen was a big lie is itself a monstrous atrocity. Anyone who makes that claim is lying to you to your face. Lying to you to your face. So what can we do? God. Joaquin's optimistic. People are becoming aware. But becoming aware is only part of the problem. You got to be able to do something about it. Were it not for these electronic voting machines, we'd be okay. The pendulum would have swung back. We'd have Trump in office. The border would be secure. We'd be energy independent, not at war in Ukraine. The American people would be thriving. The situation would be completely different. It was indispensable to get Biden and Harris in, and in effect have no government of the United States. It appears Joe Biden, the real guy from Delaware, died in 2017, replaced by a puppet. You got to have an actor reading words. No one would not take responsibility for destroying the United States, which was, has been, the greatest and most free country the world has ever known. In spite of our shortcomings. And God knows we've been documenting them here today on this very show. And I'll just say, it cannot be allowed to continue. It cannot be allowed to continue. The greatest hope on the horizon is that Russia has defeated Ukraine. That Jacob Rothschild has declared that Vladimir Putin is an enemy of the New World Order, and that the New World Order cannot proceed without Ukraine. I therefore believe Vladimir Putin has, in effect, defeated the New World Order by prevailing in Ukraine, where the justification for Russian intervention was always, always simply overwhelming, morally, legally, politically. Every argument was on the side of Russian intervention, not one on the side of Ukraine, NATO, or the U.S. The people of Western Europe have been betrayed. The people of Western Europe are going to suffer mightily. But They will not be alone. The shift to a multipolar world dominated economically by Russia and China, which are going to become the world's new economic powerhouse, have no doubt about it, means a loss in the value of the dollar, a dramatic change in the quality of life for every American. And it happened because of the present administration in Washington, D.C., in combination with the Rothschild masters. Have no doubt about it. This Biden-Harris administration has been the single most destructive in the history of the United States, and whether or not we will survive is an open question. Because if the Democrats can continue to steal election after election after election using electronic voting machines, changing the way you vote, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who runs against Biden, who runs against a Democrat. It does not matter. We had a poll I reported from Emerson College saying Donald Trump was the only Republican who could defeat Biden in 2024. Well, that's ridiculous. Any Republican could defeat Biden in 2024 if we had an honest election. No Republican can defeat Joe Biden if we do not. That's the issue. We have to restore integrity to voting. And look at all the Democrat governors. Look at all the Democrat shills. Look at all the Democrat spokesman. Look at all the corrupt figures on television in Washington, D.C., promoting the idea that the theft of the election in 2020 was a myth, that it was honest and upright. Nobody gave a shit about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Nobody wanted Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to run the government of the United States. Nobody. Honest tally, Trump had to get around 75 to 80 million votes. Biden Harris, maybe 30, 35. Wipeout, landslide. Had it been an honest vote. There's just no doubt about it. No one who takes a serious look at the evidence can have any doubt. My own review of the evidence, the polling, before and after, looking at multiple different polls, multiple indicators, overwhelming red wave in the midterm, overwhelming red wave in the midterm. Electronic voting machines save their ass. Drop boxes in the middle of the night save their ass. Exaggerated registration rolls save their ass. The Democrats, and I used to be one, have turned out to be the party of the liars, the phonies, the thieves, the killers. Look at the way they're promoting Ukraine. And there you got Mark Milley saying that we're going to support Ukraine in a counterattack on the Donbass and Crimea. This is government by morons. This is really no government at all. We have a group of lying, phony traitors running the American government. You think about it. We got to get back to paper ballots. We got to get back to hand counts. We got to get rid of electronic voting machines. That's the number one priority. Otherwise, stock up on your ammo. Lock and load. Those are the alternatives. As JFK observed, Those who make peaceful reform impossible, make violent revolution inevitable. That's where we are today. I wish it were otherwise. Thanks for being here.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...